me to do. Yes, you have, girl. Don't you know you gotta tell the truth, yeah. Baby, why don't you tell me the truth now? You know you got me doing everything crazy that you want me to do. Yes, you have, yeah, watch it.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Greenberger, the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. Currently is the director of the Center for Health and Homeland Security at the University of Maryland, where he also teaches constitutional law and seminars on futures, options, and derivatives at the University of Maryland School of Law. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Greenberger.
Nice to be here.
And tonight in this critical second debate, I imagine that what Mitt Romney will be doing, which is what his vice president said in his closing remarks in the vice presidential debate, that the choice America has is somebody that's not providing jobs for America, the incumbent. And wouldn't it be perfect for America to be run by a job creator? Now, my understanding is that this man's career is not one of so much of job creation, but of being an asset stripper. And he's also somebody that's opposed to the Dodd-Frank legislation, even though he said in the last debate that he approves of it, or most of it. So what do you make of these economic arguments that are out there on the part of the Republicans and the kind of weak response that the Democrats have put forth?
Well, I think the arguments border on, by the Republicans border on being frivolous. And, of course, that makes the weak response, especially in the president's first debate performance, that much more remarkable. Basically, Obama may be faulted, and many progressives have faulted him in undershooting the original stimulus package, which was $800 billion. Most progressives and even his economic advisor, Dr. Romer, was recommending $1.3 trillion. Larry Summers wrote it back down to $800 billion. Half of that was tax cuts that had no stimulus effect. Had he, when he had 59 Democratic senators or 60 Democratic senators, pushed through a larger stimulus package, I think unemployment would be well below 7.8% as it is today. But there can be no mistake about it. I think the thing that's been underemphasized, Obama keeps saying generally he took over and the economy was in terrible shape. I think that understates the fact. The economy was headed off of an economic cliff. Even conservative economists were agreed that unless something dramatic was done, we were going to be in the second Great Depression. And unemployment wouldn't be at 7.8% today. It might be as high as 15% today. And he did head that off. He did enough to head that off. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month when he took over. And now we're at a net gain of jobs. So if it hadn't been for Obama's response, which wasn't as strong as it could have been, and he could have made himself absolutely invulnerable by a stronger response, we wouldn't be where we are today. And frankly, when you talk about Mitt Romney's plan, you have to look no further than his chief economic advisor, who is Glenn Hubbard, who was President George W. Bush's chief economic advisor. And Glenn Hubbard and the Bush economic team took this country off an economic cliff. And on that front, on the judges' front, where he's got Robert Bork giving him advice, on foreign policy, he's got neocons giving him advice. He wants to return, there's no doubt about it, to the era of George W. Bush. And George W. Bush, in terms of the economy, drove us right up to the point of the second Great Depression. And whatever Barack Obama's shortcomings may be, he got us back into a situation where the economy is growing. The final thing I would say is Obama in his third and fourth year finally understood that he needed more stimulus, but by that time the Republicans were in control of the House, and they filibustered everything the president wanted to do in the Senate. He couldn't even fill his executive branch. He can't get his judges through, not because a majority of the Senate is opposed to what he wants to do, but because it only takes 41 senators to stop the president. He's said very little about that obstructionism, and I think a lot of the shortcoming of where we are in the economy falls right in the lap of the Republicans. But unfortunately, the president hasn't yet made that case.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Greenberger, the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. He also teaches constitutional law and seminars on futures, options, and derivatives at the University of Maryland School of Law. And we've spoken a lot about what's happening in terms of the price of gasoline and the price of foods being artificially driven up by gaming on Wall Street through the Goldman Sachs index. The consumers, just here in California, by the way, Michael, we just had the gasoline go up astronomically and prompting our two senators to look into how much the market is being gamed. But the idea that you would have a presidential candidate who represents the people who game the commodities market in order to make profits at the expense of the average citizen who gets hurt every time they go to the pump and every time they go to the supermarket, and it doesn't contribute anything to the greater good. It is just pure predatory capitalism. I'm astounded that the Democrats can't make that distinction.
Well, yes, you're quite right to be astounded. First of all, Romney would take us right back to an era. I mean, when you say he said he supported most of Dodd-Frank, he was very careful about what he said. He said he supported some regulation. He didn't want banks opening in garages. I don't think one could expect that a President Romney would be very tough on Wall Street. In fact, I think he would allow Wall Street to do whatever it wanted to do. There can be very little doubt about that. The president has several times, once in March 2011, again in March 2012, and then in the Rose Garden, April 17, 2012, has correctly targeted the culprit in gas prices being market manipulation by Wall Street banks. And the sad thing about that is he can't seem to get his own administration to organize itself to do anything about that. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We saw the worst-case scenario in his first presidential debate. The president is insular and has been passive in following up his own intellectual theses, but there can be no doubt that whatever a second Obama term will be, it will be much tougher on Wall Street, much tougher on this problem than would be true with a President Romney. President Romney would turn his back on all meaningful regulation. We'd be right back where we were on September 14, 2008, which is many financial products, trillions of dollars of financial products, completely unregulated, outside the rule of law. Dodd-Frank corrected a lot of that. It's been slow being implemented, but there can be no doubt when you have the option between a second Obama administration and an administration for Mitt Romney, that if you really want to see Wall Street take over the economy and you really want to see suffering and high gas prices and high food prices, that's exactly what's going to happen if Mitt Romney is elected president.
And Michael Greenberger, there's no question that Obama got the lion's share of Wall Street money in 2008. But now Wall Street appears to hate him. One Wall Street billionaire likened Obama's election to the rise of Hitler. And there is a lot of anger and bitterness, and all of the Wall Street money is pouring into Mitt Romney's coffers. It's interesting that just to note that J.P. Morgan Chase just posted record profits. What's their complaint, for God's sake? Yeah. Obama's presiding over an incredibly good economy for Wall Street. They've been made whole. They're doing not better than ever, but as good as they've ever done. and the market, stock market, is booming. I don't understand what their complaints are.
Well, what they're complaining about is as much as a half measure as it has been. The Obama administration, first of all, by supporting Dodd-Frank and then by implementing it, not as aggressively as many of us would like to see, but implementing it nevertheless, a lot of the easy profits that the banks had in sort of oligopolistic markets, the so-called derivative swaps market, which is a $700 trillion notional value market worldwide, 10 times the world GDP, there were five banks pre-Dodd-Frank that controlled that market. They had oligopolistic prices. They were making reckless bets for their own book, which would be stopped by the implementation of the Volcker Rule. So, yes, they're doing well. They're doing very, very well. But their view is they should be doing that much better. A lot of the easy, low-hanging fruit, unregulated profits that they received pre-Dodd-Frank have gone away. Whatever ambiguous statements Romney made in the first debate about Dodd-Frank, and believe me, I don't think there's any real recognition of seriously enforcing Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank has caused the banks to shrink their markets, change their game plans. The markets are much more competitive. There are more financial service providers who are now part of the market. There is competition. And this is not something that J.P. Morgan wants. They want to go back to the old system where five banks spread the profits in a $300 trillion notional value market. And they did it in a very lazy, uninspiring way. It had nothing to do with growing the economy, lending money to businesses or small businesses or people who wanted educational loans. It had to do with reckless, highly reckless bets that led to the meltdown. So they understand that their only chance to go back to where five banks essentially control the world economy, you have to elect Mitt Romney. As weak and really, if in relative terms, the Obama administration has been very kind to Wall Street. Some of these banks should have been taken over in 2009. Some of these banks are still zombie banks that may not really be solvent if accurate accounting is done. And Obama should have done much more. But he's done enough to make it clear to them that they're not going to go back to the old ways that drove us off the economic cliff in September of 2008 and took us, even Bernanke and other conservatives said at that time, and Bernanke continues to say, had the Obama administration not taken the steps it would have taken, we would have been in a second Great Depression. And Bernanke told the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission that depression would have been worse than the 1930s. Obama saved us from that. He has a plan that is not as radical, a return to give the banks whatever they want. One could even hope that now he's seen that being nice to banks has no political profit for him, that they will have done nothing to help him get reelected if he is reelected. And there should be no reason in a second term for him to be pulling punches with regard to regulating banks. However, given his passive nature, one can't be certain. But what one can be certain about is that a second Obama administration will be much more helpful to the middle class and will be more assertive against these banks than anything Mitt Romney or the Republican Party can offer.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Greenberger, the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. He also teaches constitutional law and seminars on futures, options, and derivatives at the University of Maryland School of Law. You had an article recently, Michael Greenberger, in The Nation about the possibility of the courts, even the Supreme Court, undoing Dodd-Frank in the radical way that they eviscerated campaign finance rules with the Citizens United decision. Recently, a judge, in fact, it was an Obama appointee, gave a victory to Wall Street by essentially scrapping the provisions in Dodd-Frank for the Commodities Futures Trading Commission to set to position limits on these bets that they take that drive up the price of oil and food, etc. They use the rubric of cost-benefit analysis. That seems to be pervasive and a gift to those who don't want regulation. What's your sense of how much the judiciary is moving to the right, just as our politics are?
Well, again, you know, the judiciary is moving to the right because the president spent 4 years not making a priority filling the vacancies that were available to him. Now, in fairness, in his second term, every vacancy virtually, or most of the important ones, have been filibustered. The most important appellate court for purposes of these regulatory issues is the D.C. Circuit. There are three Democratic eligible vacancies on that circuit that have not been filled in the first 4 years of Obama's term. He's tried to fill one of them, and the Republicans have twice filibustered that candidate. That means a minority of the Senate has stopped the president on this, as they've stopped him on many of his initiatives. But those Republican-appointed judge who still control many of these courts because of the laxity in getting Obama nominees through, have hooked their ideology on this idea of cost-benefit. And that is, even if an agency implements a statute the way Congress intended, if they don't make a finding that the benefits of their action exceed the costs, the regulatory activity is invalidated. And this so-called cost-benefit analysis, which was originated by Ronald Reagan in his first term, has become an orthodoxy among conservatives. And it's really a way for judges to second-guess congressional intent and regulatory intent. What happens in these cases, they give no deference to Congress, what Congress wants to do when it passes a statute, no deference to the administrative agency that's implementing the statute, and the judges review the rulemaking record afresh. So you've got conservative judges looking at complicated records and picking and choosing evidence that they think supports Wall Street or other big corporations, and then claiming that the evidence used by the regulators implementing congressional intent is, quote, unpersuasive, close quote. This really is a methodology of judging that goes back to the 1905 Lochner case, where that conservative court, going all the way up to 1937, was invalidating progressive state legislation and the early New Deal legislation by second-guessing what state legislatures and Congress and regulatory agencies have done and imposing their own conservative ideology. And unless, first of all, if Romney's elected with Robert Bork advising him on judicial nominees, this is going to continue, and it won't just be Dodd-Frank, but it's going to be environmental statutes, all kinds of statutes that protect the public against bad corporate policy. They will all be de facto vetoed by a policy that is a stealth second-guessing by conservative judiciary. The only hope we have for this being stopped is Obama getting reelected, and then Obama and the progressive Democratic Senate, which I hope will remain in Democratic hands, ending the filibuster's interruption of the president being able to appoint either executive branch officials or judges, and start filling the court with Obama-nominated judges. And that is the surest way to end what is a return to the kind of conservatism we saw from 1905 to 1937, where state progressive legislation and New Deal legislation was invalidated left and right under technical doctrines that were nothing more than conservative ideology presented as judicial thinking.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Michael Greenberger.
You're welcome, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Greenberg, who's the former director of the Division of Trading and Markets at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, currently is the director of the Center for Health and Homeland Security at the University of Maryland, where he also teaches constitutional law and seminars on futures options and derivatives at the University of Maryland School of Law. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the author of Plutocrats, The Rise of the New Global Super-Rich and the Fall of Everyone Else.